Welcome back to Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling. Information regarding the resources referenced on today's program can be found at www.knowingthetruth.org. Now, here to continue with today's program is Pastor Kevin Bowling.
Hey, did you, you might have seen that interview that took place recently with one of the presidential candidates, and I know the presidential debate was last night. We'll talk a little bit about that probably during the next segment here. But one of the candidates was asked recently about whether or not he supports a federal marriage amendment to the U.S. Constitution. This was asked of Marco Rubio recently, and it was covered in a news item out on the Christian Post. They posted it on December 14th, and it says this. It says, Rubio explains why he doesn't support a federal marriage amendment. The article goes on to say this. Republican presidential hopeful Marco Rubio appeared on NBC News Meet the Press on Sunday and explained why he thinks the June Supreme Court ruling legalizing same-sex marriage nationwide should be dealt with by appointing judges that, quote, that will interpret the Constitution as originally construed or constructed, unquote, rather than amend the Constitution. He went on and said this. This is still a quote. He said, if you want to change the definition of marriage, then you will need to go to the state legislatures and get them to change it because states have always defined marriage, unquote. Rubio told NBC's Chuck Todd when asked, quote, are you going to work to overturn the same-sex marriage? Asked again, are you going? I guess Chuck Todd didn't like his answer, but he asked him again. He said, are you going to work to overturn it? Rubio explained, quote, that would be conceding that the current Constitution is somehow wrong and needs to be fixed. I don't think the current Constitution gives the federal government the power to regulate marriage. That belongs to at the state and local level. And that's why if you want to change the definition of marriage, which is what this argument is about, he said, you need to go to the state legislature. Well, is that right? Is that where the decision needs to be made? Is that, or should we call for a federal amendment to the Constitution because marriage is such an important element of our society, of our U.S. society? You know, it's so fundamental to the civil society itself. The union between one man and one woman is so fundamental that it should actually be enshrined in the Constitution. Very interesting subject, to say the least. And here to talk with us about that is Dr. Greg Frazier. Dr. Frazier is the political studies professor at the Masters College, www.masters.edu, to find out more about Dr. Frazier and more about the college as well. Dr. Frazier, welcome back to the Knowing the Truth radio program.
Thank you, Kevin.
Well, let me get your thoughts. If you wanted to, I won't throw you off by asking you to comment on the thing last night. Maybe we'll bring that up a little bit later. But let's just stick with the subject at hand that I just laid out on the table. What's your general thoughts on the article and your general thoughts on some of the response that was given? I only read a portion of it, but some of the response that was given by Marco Rubio.
Well, first of all, it was sort of refreshing to have someone from the left, Chuck Todd is rather on the left, someone on the left to be concerned with the Constitution and introducing the notion of maybe changing it by amendment. Normally the left wants to just ignore the Constitution or bypass the Constitution or circumvent the Constitution or have five judges to change it from the bench. So that, first of all, that it was just kind of nice to see someone actually caring about what the Constitution actually says and saying that we should change it by actually changing it. But aside from that, I think Marco Rubio is right that the Constitution leaves marriage, along with most things, actually, in American society, to the states. And the powers that are given to the federal government are relatively limited. And so that was also somewhat refreshing to have someone who's a presidential candidate suggest that we need to leave to the states powers that actually belong to the states instead of having the federal government interfere. If you were going to change it from a national level, then you would have to amend the Constitution because, as he said, the Constitution doesn't give the federal government any power over marriage. So if you were going to do it, you'd have to do it that way. Having said that, it would be basically impossible to amend the Constitution to disallow same-sex marriage. With the change in public opinion over the last five, 6 years, there's no way you would get a two-thirds majority in the House and in the Senate, and then no way you would get three-fourths of the states. You'd actually probably have a better chance of getting three-fourths of the states to ratify it, but getting a two-thirds vote in the House and the Senate would be exceedingly problematic. But I think he's right. I don't think that's the way to go. It should be a state matter. It is a state matter constitutionally, and I don't see why the national government should interfere in it.
Lost point, I think, when the SCOTUS, the Supreme Court of the United States, overrode, when they passed that about the allowing same-sex marriage in this country, a lot of people forgot that they actually overrode the will of the people at the state level, that by overwhelming majority in many states, the people in the state had voted to not allow same-sex marriage in their states. And they just trampled on top of that, right?
Right.
I mean, I think here in the state of South Carolina, I can't remember the exact figure, but I bet you it was like 80% or something of the people that had voted that way. So they wanted their elected officials here at the state level to carry out that will, you know, at the state level, 78%, I guess, is what it was. But they didn't. They just completely trampled on it. It had no meaning whatsoever. Had no apparently very little weight with the Supreme Court justices at all. And that wasn't just true here in South Carolina, but many other states as well. Now that
right, and Rubio actually makes a good point on that. He mentions in the interview as well that states have always defined marriage. That's why some people get married in Las Vegas by an Elvis impersonator. But in Florida, you have to wait a couple days when you get your permit. And states have different marriage laws. That's why people go to Nevada to get married slash divorced, because this has always been a state matter, and states make their own determination.
So if we're saying that the federal government doesn't even have the jurisdiction to do this, did the state supreme, did the U.S. Supreme Court, in making this decision, act unconstitutionally?
Well, I think so. As late as 1971, in a case called Baker versus Nelson, the Supreme Court itself actually ruled that there was not a, quote, substantial federal question, end quote, concerning same-sex couples and marriage. In other words, they ruled as late as 1971 that this was none of their business. It wasn't a federal issue. And they in this decision, they specifically state that they are now overturning that that decision. A court then 44 years ago said it's not a federal issue, but under the more enlightened court of today, all of a sudden it becomes a federal issue. And, of course, this is what those who are in dissent on the court, Scalia and Roberts and Thomas and so forth, this is what part of what they argued, is that this was none of their business. And unfortunately, it used to be for many moons that the court would, in fact, not take cases because they were not considered federal issues, federal questions. And the court recently has done that on fewer and fewer and fewer cases. Now that we have sort of centralize so many aspects of American politics, the court now assumes a much greater role and it's extended its influence over many more issues, many that didn't used to be considered any of their business because they weren't federal issues.
Mm. Has anyone, to your knowledge, then launched an objection to say that they're not going to abide, like maybe the clerk that was there in, Kentucky, that had, said that she wouldn't issue these licenses? I don't know that she did it on the basis of saying that what the Supreme Court did was unconstitutional, but is there any notable cases, to your knowledge, where somebody said, well, I'm not going to obey this because they don't even have the jurisdiction to make that decision? It was outside of their realm, and so I'm not going to abide by it.
Well, you can't really do that. You can't really tell the court that what they did was unconstitutional, and so you're launching a challenge to it, at least not in that sense.
Mm.
All that can be done, basically, is someone who is harmed by the decision brings a case, and then that works its way up through the court system and so forth, and the court can reevaluate its decision. But that has to be, again, on the basis of someone being injured, someone being harmed or adversely affected by the decision, not simply on the basis that the court stepped out of bounds and acted unconstitutionally. Basically, only two ways can that be done. One is that the court themselves at some point decides that they acted incorrectly, or a little-known part of the Constitution allows the Congress to place things outside the jurisdiction of the court. And this is what I had argued back when the Defense of Marriage Act was passed and Bill Clinton actually signed it into law back in the 90s. I argued at the time that what the Congress should have done, rather than passing a law stating that marriage is between a man and a woman, is that they should have passed a law placing the whole issue of marriage outside the court's jurisdiction. Unfortunately, the Congress rarely, if ever, does that, but they have the authority to do it under the Constitution. But after the court has ruled, obviously, it's too late to do anything about that. The Congress can't put it outside their jurisdiction ex post facto. A long answer to your short question, no, I don't know of anybody officially challenging the constitutionality of it, because you can't really do that. You have to kind of work it through the system and get them to admit that they acted incorrectly.
Hmm.
I know there are a lot of conferences being held by conservative jurists arguing that it was done unconstitutionally, but that's just speaking to the choir.
Mm-hmm. Are you familiar with the Convention of the States movement that's taking place?
Yes.
And is that basically the same effort where they're an effort to try to get, an organized effort to get the power less concentrated in the federal government and put back into under the state's jurisdiction where it belonged in the Constitution?
Yes, it is, but I have some significant problems with it.
Mm.
The main one being, one of their arguments is, which is attractive and so forth, is that this is the way the Constitution was written. You had a convention of representatives from the states, and they wrote the Constitution and so on, and then they left that as an option for amending the Constitution. But most of the time when people talk about this Convention of the States idea, they want to do massive changes to the Constitution or even rewrite the Constitution. And frankly, I not only can't find 55 people in America today I'd want to do that, I can't find 5 people that I would trust to rewrite the Constitution.
Mm.
I think it sounds better as a theoretical concept than it would be in reality. And it also given, think about the atmosphere today in the country in terms of how willing people are to compromise.
Yeah.
That's basically non-existent, right? You've got two sides, and they're yelling and shouting at each other and so on and so forth. Well, the Constitution worked through one of those conventions of the states because people compromised. The Constitution itself is a collection of compromises. And in the current atmosphere, I don't see how they could come up with any kind of final result. And so... I think it's an interesting idea in a kind of a theoretical sense, but just looking at it practically, I just don't think it could possibly work. Nor do I trust people that are around today to be wiser than the 55 guys who did it originally.
I just brought up their website called theconventionofthestates.com, and it has three boxes on the homepage. The problem, the solution, and the strategy. They list the problem as the federal government has overreached its constitutionally established boundaries and has its hands in almost every area of our lives. Our children and our grandchildren will inherit a bankrupt nation run by an unaccountable bureaucracy. That's the problem. The solution, Article 5 of the United States Constitution, allows us to call a convention of the states to restrict the power and jurisdiction of the federal government, effectively returning the citizens' rightful power over the ruling elite. So there's what they propose as the solution, and the strategy is, it says, working together, state legislators and American citizens can restore the checks and balances on federal government or federal power that were put in place by our founding fathers to protect our liberty from the abuses in Washington, D.C. Now, as it's stated there, I would assume you agree with what's stated there, but you're saying that oftentimes this seems to devolve into that we need to rewrite the Constitution.
Right. And that's a huge movement, by the way. In academia, there are individuals who have written countless articles and a number of books on all the changes they have made in the Constitution. I actually used one of those books in one of my classes to show students what's out there. One guy who you would recognize his name because he's on television a lot as a commentator has recommended 22 changes to the Constitution. And he wants a new constitutional convention basically to make these 22 changes. Again, I agree with what they see as the problem. I just think in practice it wouldn't work. And one of the reasons is because there aren't that many people who agree with them that this is a problem. Largely because the progressives have controlled the educational institutions of America for the last 40 years, which is the basis for a lot of our problems, I would argue. Most Americans don't even understand that there should be a greater limits on the federal government, that the state should have more power, et cetera, and they don't understand that it's a problem. For most people, they see a problem, they just want government to solve it, and they don't care which government it is, and they think that the president runs the country because that's what the press tells them all the time, and so naturally the president should solve the problem. And so that's why we end up with things, you know, when there's a bird flu epidemic, you get presidential candidates asked, what are you going to do about that?
Yeah.
And the correct answer, of course, is nothing. The president can't do anything about a bird flu epidemic, but they all feel compelled to give an answer and to try and develop a strategy and whatnot, because we have chosen, largely through miseducation and misinformation of the American people expect the national government to do everything. And so I think you'd be really, really swimming upstream to try and get these constitutional conventions together and get people who even want to limit the power of the federal government, much less agree on how to do it.
I think the concept about, bringing the issue up about talking more about states' rights and so forth is important. And, I think it really help people to think through these issues better. But if any of them are talking about changing the Constitution at all, I totally agree with what you said. I don't think we want to be tweaking the Constitution at this day and age. men at their best are still men at best. And I think that, you know, the men that did it in the beginning, we shouldn't remove that ancient landmark. It's just fine. We have built within the current Constitution ways of fixing the overreach that has already taken place. It seems to me that what needs to be done is we need to just stop allowing them to do it. We need to stop allowing the president to act like a king. We need to stop allowing, you know, mission creep that's taking place in different branches of the federal government to go unabated without the American people standing up and saying, no, you're not going to do that. That's outside your jurisdiction, and we're not going to allow it. And we're going to elect people that will stand up against you if you go down that path. And you think that would be a better response?
Absolutely. I mean, there is an ongoing, continual solution to the problem, which is elect people to Congress and to other governmental offices that have a proper understanding of what the government's role is and the federal government's role and under the Constitution. Elect the right people. It's just like those who want the balanced budget amendment. It sounds like a nice silver bullet, but we could maybe talk about that some other time, but it doesn't really ultimately solve the problem any more than what they could do at any given time, which is just pass a balanced budget. They don't need a constitutional amendment to pass a balanced budget. They just need will.
Right.
And the problem is, again, because of the way people have been misinformed and miseducated, when voters go to vote, you know, they're looking for the guy who says, I'm going to do this, and I'm going to do that, and I'm going to do this, and I'm going to do that, and it all sounds good, so yeah, let's throw that guy in there. They don't really often want the guy who says, you know, I really can't do this because we don't have the money.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a good idea, but you know what? We can't do it because we have a deficit, and so on and so forth. And so what we need, you know, is some type of constraint on the part of the voters to get people in Congress who have some constraint.
Mm-hmm.
And that could happen at any time, but it unfortunately is unlikely to happen largely because of human nature. People want things.
Mm, exactly. And when you get the takers that are more than the makers, we've turned a corner in this country, and people want a lot of things right now. Free college, free medical, you know, free, although everybody else seems to have to pay for it. Dr. Frazier, there's only about a minute left, and graciously, I'm only going to, it's all we got is a minute to get your take on the thing last night. We just talked about that we need to elect people that will do the right thing for us. Anybody stand out to you last night in the debate as being that type of person that we should be thinking about?
You know, not really. I mean, let's put it this way. I think any of them would be okay for the most part, although I have some severe problems with one or two of them. But I thought last night was fairly substantive. The only problem, of course, is that whether it was the design of CNN or whatever, it's unseemly when they get pitted against each other. It's okay to have different views, but to pit them against each other in sort of a personal back and forth, such as, for example, Rubio and Cruz got into, you know, I just find that unseemly and disappointing. You know, I just expected one of them, or hopefully both of them, to just say, well, we disagree on this, but, you know, we're not going to snipe at each other.
Yeah, it's like watching wrestling or something, or a cage match, you know, when they get into that. I just want to hear them articulate what their point is, what their view is on the subject. I mean, I don't know why these debates are so hard. I think because they try to do just what you were saying. They try to they're looking for that moment where somebody makes some sort of derogatory remark against somebody else, and I guess that sells their airtime for commercials.
They're trying to stand out because there's nine people.
Yeah, exactly.
No.
Well, Dr. Frazier, thank you so much. We saw today the importance of understanding things in a proper political perspective. People get that in the training that they receive from yourself and others there at the Masters College. So thank you so much for joining us today to talk about this issue.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Okay. Again, that was Dr. Greg Frazier. He's the professor of history and political studies at the Masters College. Their website is www.masters.edu. That's www.masters.edu. Remember this, the Lord Jesus Christ said, He said you shall know the truth, and the truth will make you free. We'll see you next time.
You're listening to Knowing the Truth. To keep this ministry strong and coming your way, you can make a financial gift at knowingthetruth.org by clicking on the donate button.
You've been listening to Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling. Knowing the Truth is the outreach ministry of the Mountain Bridge Bible Fellowship, located on Highway 25 in Travelers Rest. For more information about the church and radio ministry, visit us on the web at knowingthetruth.org.
The opinions expressed on today's program are those of the announcers, their guests, and callers, and do not necessarily represent those of the staff and management of His Radio Network, the Radio Training Network, or Clear Channel Communications.